You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Is all-important theater in Brooklyn being performed at the Harvey, the converted movie house that's part of the Brooklyn Academy of Music? Actually, just a few blocks further into Fort Greene at a converted church, Sarah Rule's Passion Play recently made its New York debut. The play, a 3.5-hour-long tour de force, takes place in 16th-century England, in Nazi Germany, and 20th-century South Dakota. It's political, it's religious, and despite the serious subject, at times, it is hilarious. Joining me now are its director, Mark Wing Davey, and T. Ryder Smith, who plays Queen Elizabeth, Adolf Hitler, and Ronald Reagan. Welcome to our show.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Mark.
How did a play of this size and scope by a world-famous playwright who had a hit in Manhattan, the Vibrator play, wind up premiering in Brooklyn?
Well, I guess the reason that it premieres there is because when the idea was first mooted of the production coming to New York, Epic Theatre, who don't have vast resources, I was kind enough to be asked to do it. And I said, well, I'd like to, but I'd like a more kind of utopian environment, given that the cash rewards are going to be minuscule. And as part of that utopian environment, I'd like to be able to rehearse in the space in which we play. And also to have a kind of artisan builder and maybe even make the clothes that we need in that space so that the staging can develop more, I guess, organically. And we were fortunate that Epic managed to establish a relationship with the Irondale Center, and it's been a wonderful collaboration.
Well, it's in a church, the Lafayette Avenue Presbyterian Church. Is that still functioning as a house of worship?
I think below it does function, doesn't it, T?
It does, yes.
And it's a great place for this play because it gives it an added resonance.
Yes, it's a magnificent space. It has kind of paint peeling off the walls. It has the Beatitudes in gold leaf up in on the wall, and that has informed how the play became directed and staged within that environment.
Well, although I don't think the play was at all disrespectful, it won't please many religious people, and I wonder how the church officials have taken this. Has anybody spoken to you, T?
About that?
No. Or anything involving the church?
Not involving the church, no. But I think an audience will always come with an expectation of what the subject matter is going to be. I think we challenge that in a very fruitful and positive way.
Well, it's being marketed as Sarah Rule's Passion Play. If it were just listed as Passion Play and performed in a church, people might come expecting something very different.
Yes, I think that's right. Why the title is there, rather than God's Passion Play.
That's right. And I think that the construction of it really is these three communities who are putting on a Passion Play, but it's not, if you like, simply the Passion. It also includes Adam and Eve and other sections, I guess, of the Passion Play. And so you see these different communities where the actors play the same role, but their internal relationships, so to speak, are different. And that is part of the kind of braiding quality that exists throughout this piece and which makes it, I think, unique and very rewarding to sit through.
I've been calling you T.
Yes.
In some articles, I've seen you referred to as Smith.
Mm-hmm.
How do you prefer to be called?
T. Smith. T is fine.
I mean, every time.
T is fine.
I have to say T. Smith to you every time.
No, please, T is good.
Is this play easy to relate to as an actor?
Yes. I think every actor has a sound that they like the audience to make. You know, often it's laughter or applause, etc. I like to make an audience gasp, whether it's a gasp of shock or disapproval or of humor, etc. So the opportunities for that in this are just rife. So.
Well, you get a lot more laughs than most of the actors.
Well, yes.
Do you think it's about a religious experience or really about theater? Although I was thinking, doesn't theater in most cultures grow out of originally telling the religious story?
Yes, it does. I think that it is a mix of one of the key elements, which, of course, T is involved in, is the relationship of politicians, monarchs, to the feeling that the community has towards some event. In this case, a passion play, but what is startling to me is the way that we see that politicians want to surf on that community feeling, that sense of goodwill or fear or any group emotion, which they kind of want to capitalize on, and at the same time they fear.
Well, in the first instance, passion plays are banned by Queen Elizabeth in England because they come out of the Catholic Church.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And so this production is being done in a semi-clandestine way by people who are Catholics, but who have to hide that.
That's right. It's being done in Lancashire, which was one of the last areas of England to as it were, abandon Catholicism historically.
And one of the Queen's first acts on assuming the throne was to pass the Supremacy Act, giving her authority over all civic and ecclesiastical positions. So this was a direct threat to that sort of supremacy on her part.
But Hitler saw it as a justification for his anti-Semitic laws.
Yes, that's right.
So this is actually early days of his time in office when he's just trying to change attitudes.
It was 1 week before the vote that would have justified the constitutional change that gave him absolute powers over the German nation. He said, you can be a Christian or you can be a German, not both. And I think he went to, was it the 300th year anniversary?
Well, it was the 1934 performance.
So 300th year anniversary, basically, of the Passion Play, in order to sort of hold out a false hope for the Catholics in Germany that he would not suppress them, just to allay that fear that he would, and also to keep the Passion Play alive in order to stir up that anti-Semitic sentiment.
And then the third, this is really three plays, although they don't make much sense unless we see all three of them. The third one, it takes place in, is it South Dakota?
Yeah, South Dakota.
And Ronald Reagan visits the production of a theater play, of a passion play.
He does.
Did that actually happen?
In Sarah's imagination, it does. I think it should have. It certainly should have happened.
Yeah.
It also takes place at a time when, it covers a span of years, but before the Vietnam War or during the Vietnam War and then in the aftermath of the War. So there are all sorts of politics is as much a dominant theme here as religion, isn't it?
It certainly is. It's also the kind of the relationship between the individual and the politician and the idea of the relationship of the people to the powerful. So the Vietnam vet, played by Dominic Famusa in the third act, he laments that there are no kings on the battlefield, and Queen Elizabeth in the first piece, as it were, appears on the battlefield. She feels a responsibility to being that person in a way which I think is lamented within the particular texture of the third act.
Now, I know actors hate to be asked about how they learn all those lines, but Dominic Famusa has to learn an awful lot of lines for the three plays, and I understand he came to the production late.
He did. He was magnificent. He came in a week late because of the force of circumstance. We were let down by an actor the day before we began rehearsing. And so he, who has the largest role, had to come in with the shortest amount of time, and he does kind of magnificently in it. And,
well,
and it's a real
presence
within that piece, because he has a kind of mix of intensity and humor and vulnerability, which is really wonderful to behold.
T, first Sarah Ruhl cast you as a dead man, and then as Hitler, do you worry at all about what she thinks about you?
Typecast again, that's all I say.
The play has been described as Thornton Wilder's Our Town, set in Elizabethan England, Hitler's Germany, and Ronald Reagan's America. Do you see that?
Well, I suppose that for me, funnily enough, having just seen Our Town is not kind of deeply etched into my own particular history as if I'd been born in America.
But it's all about community.
Indeed. And having just seen the Our Town that was on David Cromer's production, which was magnificent, I think that it is about community. But what's wonderful about Sarah's piece is that the characters, the people within those fluctuating communities shift in terms of their relationships in a different, a more vivid way, for my money, than the Our Town version.
Well, jaded city dwellers sometimes will scoff at the idea of a passion play, and I wonder if that's why this is usually a small town experience, a small town phenomenon. In this case, in each one of these, this is the central experience of the town. The actors are amateurs. This is something that they think about throughout the year, and it's pretty much the highlight of their year.
That's right.
And I think it's about how that is, as we say, how it's usurped or annexed into a politician's agenda, that sense of awe or that sense of community that they then come in and exploit.
And then the play becomes an economic engine for the town. It's not just...
That's right.
It's not just a religious experience.
Precisely, as it did in Oberammergau and to a certain extent in South Dakota, although actually I understand that play now does not take place. Ironically, when I first began directing this play, it did take place.
And is there a connection there, Mark?
Yes.
Think? I don't know.
Now
let's
we have kind of superseded it. We take place and they don't.
Did you... You both worked with Sarah Rule before, haven't you?
Yes.
I've only worked with... I mean, I came to the play years and years ago, this play. So I guess I feel like I've worked with on other things, but I think I've done a reading. I did a reading of The Clean House.
How long have you been working with this play?
Must be about 8 years.
Wow.
Maybe. Because I heard a reading of it in Sundance when I was doing a play by Naomi Iizuka and this young, playwright. And I said, oh, I like your voice. Can I have a copy? And then I was working in London and I did a very, very bare bones production, much more bare bones than this current one. For £50 per play. And Sarah came over to see it, and there were only two plays then, the first and the second. And so some of the... We've had an ongoing relationship about all sorts of elements within this play, and some of the elements that were in that very first little production, like a big table and some chairs, have lasted the distance.
Many actors don't get the opportunity to show the kind of breadth of characterization that you do, T, in the course of their careers, never mind in a single evening. When you auditioned, did you audition for every one of the parts?
I did, yes. I came in to audition for the Chicago production a few years back at the Goodman. I think it was Mark and Sarah, and there was one other person in the room. I can't remember who it was, but... It was basically just us working on it, and I think an audition should be an opportunity for an actor to just show what you would do with the role. So I just tried to show them that, and they were foolhardy enough to say, okay, let's go with that guy.
And also it's not for us, for those particular roles, what was marvelous about T, and certainly some of the other actors who've essayed those things, is that it's not an impersonation as such. It is really something which is filtered through his own sensibility, his own personality, which draws on the reality but is not confined by it.
Well, in the case of Ronald Reagan, you are playing somebody we all have seen.
Right.
Hitler, less so. At least we don't know what he would have sounded like in English. I don't know whether the speech you give as Hitler actually was drawn from his own words.
It was, yes. His version of dinner conversation.
We've been talking about the interconnection between religion, politics, and theater. And Ronald Reagan himself once said that politics is just like acting, only you write the words yourself. He's quoted in the play as saying that.
Well, certainly we've inherited an enormous number of theatrical elements, a theatrical lexicon. That still exists in most of our public events, televised trials, political conventions, all of these displays of people who are confessing a transgression. This is all very theatrical, so we've inherited that. And I think there are politicians like Reagan who are canny enough to exploit that. I mean, he was literally an actor, and he was saying, I'm going to act the role of the president and enact this agenda of my cabin, my advisors. I think he was hired as a performer.
This production has gotten great reviews, and yet it's not in a venue that most people think of as a place to go for theater. Has that been a problem?
I don't really know. I'm one of those people who doesn't really read the notices. I've heard they're good. I'll read
them
later.
Great.
Just that one night. Just that one night with the fire alarm. That
was yes, the fire alarm.
What happened?
Well, on the very first preview, there's smoke in the
Vietnam War. So the fire alarm.
That's right.
Tends to do that.
And what happened is that in the tests that we had done, the alarm, nothing had gone off, but a box had been unfortunately placed in front of the smoke machine, and the machine went off and shot this smoke straight up into the sensor, effectively. And then the fire alarm went off. Everyone had to abandon the theater, had to come out onto the sidewalk. And then after about 5 or 10 minutes, with absolutely no prompting from me, the actors began to perform, to continue the play on the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. For the audience, and it was incredibly moving, accurate, inventive. They had to do all sorts of things.
It was remarkable theater, yeah. I mean, I was dressed as the Queen with a submachine gun in my hand, so sort of some of the authority devolved to me, and we were talking on the way down the stairs. Let's do the show here on the stairs. When we got on the steps outside, we knew we'd be in for a long wait, so we said, let's just continue performing. And Nicole Wiesner, to her credit, just stepped up and started the song that was the next scene in sequence and started ad-libbing the lyrics to incorporate the fact that we're all standing outside on this chilly April night on the sidewalk, and then flashlights started to come out to illuminate things. Hale Appelman stripped his shirt off, and he was hoisted up against the wall of the church on the crucifix.
My associate had his computer with him. He then was able to play a music cue.
He found a sound cue. We created
boats to come out.
Shadows of the
hands.
Boats on the wall of the church and the cast of the streetlight. Yes, it was almost disappointing to go back inside after that. It was remarkable theater.
Well, you must be disappointed that this is a limited run. Are there plans to continue it?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think my druthers would be that because we've redone it with road boxes and containers, would be to have road boxes and containers that we pack the show up in, and then someone says, come on, come to this space, and we'll do it for this period of time. But that's rather a utopian.
We know
notion.
We can do it on a sidewalk, so, you know.
Exactly.
But you could do it in any church. And Brooklyn is the borough of churches. You know that.
We probably could if there was a large space within that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to thank you so much for being with us today. I've been talking with Mark Wing Davey, who is the director of this new production of Sarah Rule's Passion Play, and with T. Ryder Smith, who plays some of the parts of a large cast. How many people altogether?
11 plus five apprentices who move boxes and carry fish and just work their spiritual
fins.
Mm. And the 11 major characters, all just an amazing ensemble. Is this a group that's worked together before?
No.
This is just something that...
Some have worked together before. It's a kind of big family. I think that both Sarah and I certainly have a sense of warmth towards people who've been involved in the production in whatever capacity over the period that we've worked on it, so that they are kind of drawn from different places. However, the majority of people are brand new. Six are brand new.
And actors always say, you know, it's an ensemble piece. It wouldn't have happened without the ensemble, but it's absolutely true in this case.
And it takes place on South Oxford Street in Brooklyn between Fulton and Lafayette.
That's right.
And I thank you so much for being with us today.
Our pleasure.
Thank you, Leonard. Thank you.